It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, John Weideman, the play-by-play announcer here on WGN Radio for the Chicago Blackhawks, gets ready for the playoffs and talks about his strategy, his philosophy, his skill when it comes to calling a hockey game on the radio. Wow, that's amazing to think about. We'll talk with John coming up at the big table at 8 o'clock. Coming up at 9 o'clock, unbelievable. Butch Vig is going to be here, the legendary music producer and drummer for the band Garbage. His track record is unreal. Nirvana's Nevermind, Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream, Sonic Youth, Dirty. I mean, these are sort of the seminal, if not the most successful alternative rock albums of all time. And Butch Vig had a hand in all. It's all for the documentary that's going to be premiering here in the Midwest at SimFest tomorrow night, as well as an after party at Metro featuring the band Catherine, which is pretty cool. Also coming up later, Scott Armstrong, who is the man behind the Showtime show Dice, which just started this weekend. And also Rebecca Drysdale, who is a writer from Chicago, who was a writer on the show Baskets with Zach Galifianakis. So that's coming up tonight here on The Download. Well, a big day for police news, a shooting death of a 16-year-old on the West Side after an armed confrontation last night. A city council committee voted to remove an interim tag from the new interim police superintendent, Eddie Johnson. And the Trib is reporting that the Mayor's Police Accountability Task Force has completed their work, and it does call for some changes after saying the police and the police board make up a, quote, broken system rooted in racial bias and indifference. Wow. That may be shocking to hear for some, but not all of Chicagoans. The University of Chicago law professor Craig Futterman has studied the police department and their relationship with the community for years. And just this past week, he released a study along with Jamie Calvin and Chaselyn Hunt. It's called They Have All the Power: Youth Police Encounters on Chicago's South Side. The research comes from over 2 years of study talking to kids at the Hyde Park Academy High School. It's put on by the Mandel Legal Aid Clinic at the University of Chicago Law School and the Invisible Institute. The opinions and thoughts of the kids are pretty stark, and the study recommends several changes to the way the police and youth interact. Craig Futterman joins me now. Craig, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Justin.
Good to talk to you. It's been a while. I'm interested in this because, as I just said, I mean, today seems to be a day of police news. Accountability seems to be still something that people are seeking. But with your study and the study that could be coming out this week, it seems like we might start to see some results.
Wow, is all I can say. It does feel like a time that I haven't experienced at any time in my life before, and not just in this day, but it really feels like there is a reckoning in some sense, and I really credit that to the work of young people who have forced all of us, both in Chicago and around the nation, to grapple with the reality of their experiences and to challenge us to care and to challenge us to address these fundamental issues. And certainly Chicago is the epicenter of everything right now.
It's interesting. At the beginning of the study, when you lay out what you guys are trying to accomplish, one of the key words is accountability, just this idea of Rahm Emanuel's big speech he had at the beginning of right after Laquan McDonald's video was released in December, where he essentially talks the talk, but the question always remains: are they going to back that up? And that's what your study does, really, to try to get to what the issue is when it comes to interaction between the youth and the police.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's not just talking the talk. It's walking the walk. And when the video first came out, I mean, first we were operating from the mayor as well as operating from a fairly familiar playbook where first it was denial, nothing happened, and nothing to see here, and secrecy. Then as with the release of the video, we got one bad apple, but that's all there is. And then we saw everything else. And the mayor, and that really was an historic moment, talking the talk. And now it is exactly that, about walking the walk. And walking the walk is related to talking the talk because it starts with honesty. And that's one of the key things that we found in working with kids over this time. It's like the only way that people are going to, and our children are going to, trust the police is if we're honest with them. And that means when, things go down, like something horrible happens, like police officer shoots someone like what happened today. Someone's accused of brutality, that we're honest with people, and we're honest with the children from day one, that we don't hide stuff, we don't cover things up. And, you know, if there's something like a video, that release it. You release it within 48 hours. That's what the best departments are doing. Honesty is the first way how you gain folks' trust. And then, as you mentioned, a conversation has to start with honesty, but they got to end with accountability. Yeah. And that means when, in those cases, when someone abuses their power, that they're held accountable for it.
Well, Craig, let's talk about this study. You know, let me ask, why did you spend 2.5 years at Hyde Park Academy High School? What was it about those kids, and what were you trying to accomplish?
Sure. What started with just with this premise, you know, we've been, these issues aren't new. They've been with us for as long as I've been alive, honestly. And but among the things that we noticed and that we saw with all the talk that goes on about the issues, that one of the most critical perspectives that tended to be missing, and it's not just voice, but the perspectives and experiences of people who are most impacted by urban police practices. Not that they're the only perspective, but a necessary perspective to having a fully informed conversation to figure out what needs to be done. And so that starts then with youth, with kids, with our high school students, with our children, Black kids in the city. And we started by talking with kids all over the city, predominantly, though, I should say, on the west and south sides, doing workshops. And then, as you said, we spent the last, so this has been going on actually for us for probably more than 4 years. And the last 2.5 years, we immersed ourselves in Hyde Park High School, Hyde Park Academy, a school that's just a few blocks away from the law school where I teach, a couple blocks away from the lab school where my daughter goes to school. And what we learned there was two completely different realities between, say, kids at lab school just 5 blocks away from kids at Hyde Park Academy. And the first thing that just jumped out at us, and it was really stark, and while it wasn't news to the kids, it really was news to lots of us, which is that a completely different constitution governs kids in Black neighborhoods than the same constitution we teach in our classrooms. In contrast to what most of my law students at University of Chicago, the high school students see police as a ubiquitous presence where they live. They live with the ever-present possibility of being stopped and searched by police. That's their reality. That's their normal. And those are encounters which, is, as you said, in which the kids feel like the police have all the power. And then when I talk to like classrooms of, not just classrooms, but I would speak with kids at lab just a few blocks away, high school students, same age, more than 100 students, not a single one of them had an encounter like that. Not a single one. And, you know, so the first thing is just that we saw was just two completely different realities.
It's been interesting because, you know, you, as one of the studies and one of the things that was happening in the school was you would ask the kids to role play, and the kids would play the police officer. And what you saw and what you talked about was, you know, I mean, having two kids actually do it probably showed you a more casual sort of disrespect that's happening between not just the kid to the police, but the police to the kid.
Yeah, but exactly. And part of that, though, you know, because the role plays helped a lot, because things were so normal to the kids. This is just how things were. And it'd be like asking someone about the weather outside. And it's like, you know, how dumb can you all be? It's the weather. It just exists. Right. How could you not
know
this?
They weren't dramatizing it. They weren't embellishing it, because it was just normal life for them.
Yeah, and so the role plays actually helped us to see things that kids had difficulty articulating because it was so normal. It wasn't striking, and we would see everything from, you know, the officer's gait as approaching the kids, to tone of voice, to the actions that gave an unambiguous message of that inspired fear and a message of authority. As some of the kids said, things like "They're over you." We're under them, therefore I don't matter. And it would break your heart. I mean, it honestly did break our hearts. And I guess one of the unifying theme, and this is why we called the paper what we did, that was articulated by, in one form or another, by virtually every kid we talked with, was that the police have all the power. And that, you know, because what we were focused on, we weren't focused on the extreme abuses, but we just were trying to explore the everyday, the normal, the, you know, what happens every day.
You have a great line in here: the big encounters live in the little encounters. That's kind of sort of the idea of the study. And I want to ask too, to be, you know, from the police standpoint, I mean, this is something that I think a lot of people who'll be listening right now are like, well, that's what happens when you live in some areas where violence is predominant, where police aren't sure what's going to happen at a stop, if the kid's going to run, if the kid's going to shoot, that the police do have, you know, they have to have their guard up as well. And that's something that you also address a little bit.
Yeah. And one of the things that we found, and this is, you know, contrary to what most folks think, and this is why I think it, you know, at least this is a critical part of the conversation. So our practice of, and really disparate practice of, stopping, searching kids in certain neighborhoods and young people in certain neighborhoods and not others, because we think these are neighborhoods with higher crime, higher criminality, and sometimes statistics bear that out, that those practices, though, may actually undermine police effectiveness rather than help. One of the things that we learned from the kids, and it makes sense too, that even what was described to us were anything but, for the most part, respectful encounters when these stops occurred. But even the most respectful encounter gives the unmistakable message that we think you look like a criminal. And that's actually what the law says, because we can't stop a kid or any person unless we have a reasonable belief they committed a crime, they did something wrong, and we can't search them unless we know or we have a reason to believe that they're armed and dangerous. So every time we stop a child, we're telling that child, we think you, he or she, looks like a dangerous criminal. And that affects kids. It affects how they feel about police. It affects how they feel about themselves and how alienated. I mean, that was the thing I think that struck us the most, was just the degree and depth of alienation that so many Black high school students, these are kids who are in school, had toward law enforcement, so much that wouldn't come forward, even sometimes when something bad happened to someone close to them. And we saw, and we looked at data that backed up not just, you know, the empirical realities, and we would see that the neighborhoods that had the greatest numbers of abuse complaints, of police abuse complaints, were the exact same neighborhoods where police had the most trouble solving crime. The very lowest clearance rates for violence, for murders in the city, were in the areas where the police had the least trust. So this hasn't been, so one of the things we learned is that, or at least it raises the real question, is this effective? Yeah. Is this effective?
Let
Are we,
you,
is it helping keep people safe?
Craig, we only have about 2 minutes left. Let me ask you,
sure.
When you do with this study, come up with recommendations, 22
yep.
recommendations. What? Just give us a quick idea, synopsis of what those recommendations would be.
Yeah. So starts with honesty, like we talked about, ends with accountability. And accountability means that we put in place credible systems to investigate police misconduct. Systems like, actually, one of the things that we proposed with Alderman Hairston just the other day, to create a credible independent body that would investigate police misconduct in Chicago. Transparency, honesty, and then the basic principle, and this may sound, you know, this may sound so basic, but just basic respect. I mean, I'll sound like a little kid when I say this. It's, you know, I'd say, just quit it. And it sounds easy. Just quit it. Just treat, you know, stop doing this mess, and let's start treating everyone with the respect that they deserve. But that sounds easy, but it actually requires a change of mindset, because we still train our police to, in a military model, where you look at folks and Black kids in particular as potential enemies or criminals. And what we need to teach officers is to look at the children as just that, as all of our kids. That will make them far more effective and establish the kind of relationships we need to really make us all safer.
The study is called They Have All the Power, Youth Police Encounters on the Chicago South Side. It was put out by the Mandel Legal Aid Clinic at the University of Chicago Law School and the Invisible Institute. It was written along with the kids at Hyde Park Academy High School by Craig Futterman, Jamie Calvin, and Chaselyn Hunt. Craig Futterman is a Chicago Law School, University of Chicago Law School professor. He joins us tonight. Craig, thanks so much for taking some time out tonight.
I really appreciate you having me as well, Justin. Have a great night.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Craig Futterman, the University of Chicago law professor, talking about the relationship between police and kids on the south side of Chicago, African-American kids, and really talked about 2.5 years in the Hyde Park Academy High School, where he and others studied the kids and their stories of interactions with Chicago police. You know, it's always when you have professors on, you always want to get, you know, police officers involved as well, or people, you know. So I want to bring in Jim. Jim is a Chicago police officer. Jim, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us tonight.
Well, I appreciate your putting me on. I just had a couple of comments, and I wish he was still with you because, you know, I was responding to a shots fired call when he was on, so I didn't get it all. But he talked about police treating people with respect. How about teaching these kids out here to teach everyone with respect? Right. They shoot each other every day, every night. They don't treat their family with respect. They don't treat their friends with respect. They don't treat the police with respect. It's got to be a two-way street. You know what? We have to hire 200 extra people tonight to go to these neighborhoods because people don't know how to act like human beings. All they do is shoot each other, and then we get blamed for a couple of bad apples. You know, there's a bunch more people shot and killed by members, citizens of the public than there are by the police.
Right.
And, you know, it's great that he goes to Hyde Park Academy, which is a great area, probably an excellent high school. How about go to some of these high schools that aren't so nice, that are in Englewood, where I am right now, and talk to them and see what their problem is with the police, and then come talk to the police and ride with me for a couple nights, or ride with guys on my tactical team and ride around and see how we get treated, and maybe he'll get a little better understanding.
Is that something that I think you want the public to understand, too, is that when you say it's a two-way street, when you come up to the car, you pull somebody over, I mean, there's already a level, the tension or the lack of respect between the person you pulled over and you. I mean, it's already over the line.
But you know what? There is, and a lot of guys, maybe people won't believe this, but I don't treat anybody poorly. I don't treat anybody disrespectfully till I'm treated the same way. I go up to somebody flags me down, I'm more than happy to help them. And all the guys who work on my team, I've been doing this for 24 years. They would much rather have a non-confrontational issue with the public and help somebody rather than be adversarial right off the bat. I mean, if you're adversarial right off the bat,
right,
you get absolutely nothing accomplished.
Jim,
it's going to be another fight.
I had a police officer on one time, and they mentioned that, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, at a younger age, you're seeing a different kind of relationship with a police officer. Like if a toddler or a six-year-old or a seven-year-old goes, you know, close to the police officer, like, watch out, he's going to arrest you. Like, there's not that sort of familiarity or that sort of, like, you're a respected member of the community. It's more like, watch out for the popo, that kind of thing. Do you see that?
Yeah, they use that a lot. Like, they're disciplining their child and the police walk by. If you don't react right, he's going to lock you up. That's a horrible thing. I mean, when I was a little kid, I loved the police and I respected them, and I got a big thrill out of it when they interacted with me. And, you know, that's another thing maybe, too, to teach people in high school what to do when you're stopped by the police. I mean, keep your – and I don't say this just for minorities because I thought it was foolish the other day. They said black men have to be taught to keep their hands on the steering wheel. Well, guess what? My daughter is a white 16-year-old. I tell her when she's pulled over by the police, keep your hands on the steering wheel. That's one less thing he's got to worry about. It doesn't have to do – you know, not everything is black versus white. It's respect. Respect on both sides.
Yeah.
And again, most of us will respect people as long as they treat us with respect. I mean, we're just trying to do our job and get home with our families and do the right thing. And I understand that people are calling because they need the police and they need help with the situation. And trust me, we'd rather help them and make sure their night's great or goes better than it's going. And again, so we can go home and maybe they can have a nicer, more peaceful night.
Yep. Jim, thanks for calling in. Jim, Chicago police officer, thanks for calling in, buddy. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your letting me on. Thank you.
There you go. So a little bit of a different point of view than Craig in the study.